are many different aspects you could look at within Genesis 18, but I'm going to concentrate on hospitality. And we tend to feel hospitality is all to do with food, and obviously there is food involved in this particular passage. But that only touches on the minor part of where we're at. Michael Frost argues that practicing hospitality to God, making room for him in our lives, can be measured to some meaningful degree by our willingness to make room for the foreigner, the outsider. So if you wonder what the overarching message is, that's it. We're used to popping along to places, and there's hotels all over the place. You know, you can book places now. You just, you know, go online and you go on Airbnb and find someone's room who's not using it. You don't even have to see them. Just slip them back, stay the night, pay some money, slip out again. Very convenient. It hasn't always been the case. And of course, a culture exists which says how you look after people who are visiting the area denotes who you are in your own humanity and how you represent yourself to the other person, what you believe they are as well. And within hospitality, the whole idea is as you offer hospitality to a person, you're extending your protection of your household. And so we have here a situation where God is confirming his message to Abraham that he will bring him a son, Isaac. Now we had that mentioned last chapter. This is now confirmed. So important is that message that he turns up personally. So the three men walking along, God and two angels arrive, and it describes Abraham's reaction as sitting in the noonday sun, the hottest part of the day. He sees these people. Jumps up and walks towards them and starts to deal with them. This is a man who has, you know, 400 plus people, men, and mind all the women and children under his authority, but he deals personally with them himself. This is an honor that the head of the effective tribe says, I'll deal with this. And so he comes to God and he asks him what he wants, and he starts to offer him hospitality, and he says, well, just wait here. I'll prepare food. Now, in today's culture, if I come to visit you or you come to visit me, normally we'd have a cup of tea, and you might have, if I've got a bit of food knocking around, have a bit of food, and we might prepare a sandwich or things. That's fair enough. It'd be very unusual if you arrived at midday and I suddenly go, hang on a second, I've got a full dinner I'm going to prepare for you. I'm just going to nip off and slaughter the animal. We're going to start baking the bread. You might be kind of going, hang on a second, I've got to leave at 12:30. I don't want to hang around for all of this. But even in a lot of cultures today, probably not the Western cultures we're used to, but other cultures around the area, this is normal behavior. And we have people around the area we know that if we called in to see them, they would instantly start putting on full meals because that's how they show hospitality. And within ancient Near East culture, this is what you did. You don't just give it perfunctory, I'll have a cup of tea, we'll have a quick chat, and off you go again. This is, you come in and have the whole thing. So, he runs inside, says to his wife, off you go, start preparing bread, runs out, goes, finds himself a food, and says to one of his servants, go slaughter that, start preparing that, and then goes back to the important position of standing by and attending, servant-like, waiting, is there anything you need, attending to the Lord, two angels. A demonstration of acceptance of what's going on. Abraham rearranges his whole day and makes time for God. We spend our days rushing back and forth. dialogue goes on, and God confirms what he'd said to Abraham earlier, we had recorded in the previous chapter, and he says, well, where's your wife? He says, well, she's in the tent. Now, this is unusual, because normally you don't even refer to a woman's wife in this particular culture. You shouldn't even be thinking about her, but obviously that's different for God. And God's got a specific purpose, because he wants Sarah to know the truth of the situation as well. He says, well, this time, I'll come back this time next year, and she'll be with him till our child. Now, she's listening in, and she goes, not a chance. Way past this age. Been too long. Why now? And in her mind, she laughs. And God picks her up on it. Why did you laugh? Now, I'm not quite sure exactly how the dialogue of then she comes as she steps out. It doesn't record. She steps out and mentions to God. It does say she responds to him by saying, well, I didn't laugh. You did, says God. Now, we know that Isaac means laugh. We have the response of Abraham that last time he kind of laughed as well. Both of these people, they're trusting God, but they're kind of, this is just beyond. We're going to be with a child. He's nearly 100 and I'm just nearly 90. Now, from what I can gather, we'll come to it in a couple of chapters' time, she's still an attractive lady. And since Abraham lived to around 175, I don't know where they physically sit within the being able to give birth compared to modern day humans. You know, I don't know if she's past that point or not. But regardless, in her own mind, she feels like this is unlikely to happen. But that's the promise he makes. I'll be back this time. I shall be with you. Well, not only has Abraham made time for God, but also Abraham has allowed God to speak into his life. He's spoken about a personal statement. I'm going to make this happening come upon you. I'm going to start with this child of blessing. But then he sends on the two angels. Now, we all know this afterwards. We don't know angels. It's described as this. And he said, we're going to send down to Sodom. So now Sodom and Gomorrah, Sodom was renowned for being a wicked city full of licentiousness. And so these angels go down, and then God stops and says, well, shall I reveal my plans to Abraham? And of course he does, because Abraham's a friend of God. Abraham is concerned about the things that God is concerned about. So if you want to know how God moves in this world today, spend time with God. We have this great video there. Do you read the book? Is it just a picture on the wall, or is it a window to another world? And it struck me as I was reading this, you know, you'd read these Harry Potter movie books and all these sorts of things. All these wizards are always going around trying to find all these great secrets in a book. And if you get a book and open it and read these magic words, suddenly power will come to you. And this is echoed, you know, all sorts of stories all over the place. And it just, you know, I thought about it and thought, well, here we have the Word of God. We just need to open that book, read its words, allow the Holy Spirit to illuminate to us. And not power comes to us, but true life comes to us. We can get to build to see God's kingdom through that window coming in to our lives. If we spend time with God and allow him to talk to us about his plans. So God says, well, okay, I'll reveal my plans. The cry of Sodom has reached me and I'm going down to check it out. Now, this is a great phrase. Do I really believe the all-knowing God needs to visit personally to check out Sodom? Is he going to learn anything as he suddenly gets down there that he didn't know in heaven? Aha! Hiding under the rock. There's something I'd not spotted before in heaven. No, but what he's doing is saying, this is my statement of justice. Rather than just something happening, I'm stating to you, I'm coming down to make a thorough check-in to show and demonstrate to at least those who survive that there is justice involved. I'm not just taking life willy-nilly. So he makes his plans out. I'm going to go and deal with all of the people there. Now, you know, spoilers if you haven't read the chapter ahead. But Lot and his family, relations to Abraham, are living in Sodom. So at this point, Abraham could have said, okay, excuse me, just one point. Would you mind getting Lot and his family out? And God could have said, yep, no problem. And Abraham could have gone, good visit, I'll go back to doing what I'm doing. You get on with it, send Lot and his family up here when they're able to escape. Would have covered all his requirements. His family would have survived. But he doesn't do that. He starts to think about other people. He puts into practice what it means to consider the other before yourself. His own needs would have been satisfied by taking care of Lot. He could have trusted God to do that. And he could have not involved himself at all. Now you might think this has nothing to do with us today, but we are a nation made up of loads of immigrants. On my trip in yesterday, John on the train was pointing out all the various historical points. And he was saying, oh, this is where all the Polish people were brought in, and this was the immigration camp where they were staying. This is what it used to be here. It's where the race course used to be. And he was telling me all the tales. And of course, John knows all his background. We are a nation which has to bring in other people, except other people. We're being challenged. And as we sit, we kind of go, well, how does God affect our life to consider how we view other people? How are we stepping out in hospitality to welcome people into the kingdom of God and into our lives? Not judging them by saying, because you're different, I'm going to treat you poorly. And it may seem obvious, and I hope it's obvious to us as believers of Jesus Christ, that no matter what person's background, skin color, faith at this moment, that they all deserve to be treated with respect because they're made in the image of God. But sadly, that's not always the case of people around the place, and specifically, my biggest concern is not all the way of Christians around the place. Venezuela is in crisis at the moment. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. They've got 1,000,000% surrounding areas are responding in various different ways. Some are taking them in, some are blocking them out. We need to be challenged on how do we view those who are other than us, but still in the image of God. How do we reach out and how do we care for them? And that's a question which needs to be challenged by us today. Within Australia, how do we view Abraham has already helped out the city of Sodom. They all got sacked a few chapters ago. I don't know physically how many years ago it was, specifically in the timeline. But the king lost, king of Sodom lost. All his items got taken. And Abraham goes off, rescues everybody and brings them all back. And says to the king of Sodom, you keep everything. Because nothing from you is going to become wealth to me. So it's not like the king of Sodom doesn't know who Abraham is or wasn't aware of how the God that Abraham worshipped intervened in his life. And it's not like they even changed their ways. They just kept going the way they were. This is not a nice town. And we'll see next chapter exactly how poor they are. So it's not like he's kind of going, the world's a better place for these people. I suspect he wouldn't be. But his heart is still to reach out and say, can we see justice? He could have done nothing. But he steps out and he speaks to God. there's 50 people, if there's 50 righteous people there, well, okay, I won't destroy the town. Now, what he's doing is a particular type of ancient Near East sort of discussion. This is how they do about things. They speak up and they speak again. This is the way they negotiate. That's what he's doing, negotiating with God. But he knows the character of God. He understands God's justice. And he's speaking to God's mercy. God, I know you are a just God. And you would be called unjust if you destroyed the whole of that town and they were found to be 50 righteous people. Because people would go, he destroys the just with the unjust. What sort of God is that? So if I can find 50 people, will you spare the whole town? Well, of course, says God. 50 people. Because that would be a just act on my behalf. And that's why I'm going down there personally to check it out. I want to be known as a just God because I am a just God. Well, what about, maybe we don't quite get 50. What about if we only get 45? Okay, 45. If I only find 45. Well, now that I've mentioned 45, might not quite get to 45. What if we only find 40? 40. All right, if there's 40 of them there, righteous people, people who are seeking my heart, people who know me, there's 40 people there, then I'll spare the consequences. Well, now I've taken the time to discuss it with you. What about if there's only 30 of them? 30? If you can find 30 righteous people who follow my heart, the rest will be spared from their imminent destruction. Because of those 30, I will apply my justice to all of them. And those 30 will spare the rest. Well, now that we've been talking about it, what about 20? Oh, 20! Okay, if you feel 20 is the demonstration that with only 20 people, just people, God still spared everybody, then yes, we'll go with 20. Well, all right, now we've got down to the nuts and bolts of it. I'll get down to my last statement. What if I only find 10? 10 righteous people. What if there's only 10 of them there? Okay, says God, if there's only 10, I'll spare them. Abraham's hit on something which is then continued through the Bible. Ten men within Jewish culture was a synagogue. What if I find, God, your church is present in Sodom? What if there's 10 of us who believe in you? What if there is a church in that city of sin and it's interceding for that city? Will you turn away from your righteous wrath against the rest of these people? And we know it's horrendous. I've watched them do it. You've confirmed it. We know what they're like. Will you turn away from that punishment if you can find a church based in that place? 10 righteous people will seek after me. Yes, said God, I'll do it if there's 10 righteous people. Abraham stood up and said, I'm going to intercede for this group of people, even though I know they're sinful. I'm going to intercede because I want to know that God's justice is there. Do we do the same? We see horrendous things on YouTube about people sitting quietly on a train minding their own business when people come up and say, because you're different from me, because you might be a Muslim, I'm going to pick on you. Because you're female, I'm going to pick on you. Would we be willing to step up and intercede because we believe in Jesus Christ, put ourselves out for someone who's different, that we don't know, that might not morally be the same as us? see, Abraham could have said, "Load, not bother," but he relied upon the justice of God and said, "If you can find 10 people there, will you spare them?" The 10 people are righteous. They follow God's heart. The blessing they bestow goes to all sorts of people who are completely unrighteous and wicked. And we can be tempted within our Christianity, within our walk with God, to go, "Well, this is a blessing for me and me only. We're not going to give to anybody else." God says, "No, you've got to be bigger than that." We are blessed with having a Mothers and Babies Club on Fridays. To be honest, it's funded by us here, not funded by anyone who attends. Most of you now are the age where you don't have the kids there. There's no benefit for anybody here, really. We don't really need it from one perspective, do we? Except it's our blessing from God being bestowed upon other people. And that's a practical example. Because we exist, other parts of this community are blessed. And that's what it means to be a believer in Jesus Christ. And that's what it means that when you've been given things and you've been blessed, you must take those and bring that blessing to other people. People who probably don't deserve it. There again, I suspect before you knew God, God used other believers to bring blessing into your life. And if you were anything like me, you didn't deserve it either. But that's okay, because that's how God operates. And so Abraham says, if there's a people of 10 people, if there's a church there, will you spare them? God says yes. Now, we know that he doesn't find 10 people, which is a pretty poor job, considering there's Lot and his wife and his wife's two kids. So that's 4 of them. They don't need 6 more. We know at the time that his two daughters were dating, or whatever you want to call it, betrothed, or just hanging out with guys. They might have been believers, that was 6. Yeah, he had to find 4 more. Failed entirely. No church. If 10 people could have changed the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah, what can we do here? How can we change the direction of Altona? And we're not alone. It's not like we're the only church around. There's loads of us. There's ones down there, ones over here. We're not bereft. We're empowered. And you can take what God has brought upon you and bring that change and blessing into other people's hearts. If you desire to show the hospitality of God to others as he's chosen to show it to you. We can change the world. Jesus spoke to 12 men and said, "Take this message." And they took it and changed the world. He spoke to one woman on his resurrection, and she went out and shattered illusions of how life should be by taking the message saying, "Jesus is risen." Abraham intercedes with God, and God agrees to his statements. That's not unique to Abraham. He hasn't got a stamp there which says only Abraham can do this. You can do this. You can intercede for the people around you. But you have to genuinely care for them. You have to want to see them. You have to have the heart of God for them. So, do we understand that the hospitality that God showed to us by calling us into his kingdom is to be passed on and bring blessing to other people? Can we see that only 10 people, a synagogue, modern day now a church, can bring a change to the whole area around? And we here at Altona Baptist have that opportunity if we're willing to spend our time knowing God and intercepting see them. Spend time with them. Talk to them. Find who you can pray for. Sometimes you can ask people and say, what can I pray for? And they'll say this, that, and the other. Sometimes they may say, but I want you to pray for me. That's all right. Just don't tell them. It's okay. They'll never know. But you can still pray. And sometimes it just means standing up for the stranger and the other in your life. Because that demonstrates God's heart and care for all his creation. So can I ask you to pray about that? To see how God would use you to bring blessing to the area of Altona, to the area where your influence is, and to see that God's not done with this world yet. Not at all. Let me pray. Jesus, I just ask that we can have your heart, that we can have your heart which just